Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
This next segment is about 10 minutes long and contains some mature content that might not be appropriate for all listeners. I recently had a long conversation with a woman named Audrey Morrissey, and there's one moment that really stands out because we were talking about her experience in Boston's sex trade. So I asked her what she thinks about Amnesty International's call to fully decriminalize prostitution. And at first, Audrey shook her head and bit her lower lip as if to stop herself from saying something. But then she changed her mind and spoke.
What I will say is this. Anywhere that there is an adult commercial sex industry, there are always, always children in there. There is no way around that. So you cannot justify, you know, making to me like that kind of outrageous nonsense. That, you know, it.
Legalization.
No, yeah. There's no safe way. There's no safe way to do this. You know, and I strongly feel that people are not for sale. People shouldn't be able to buy people. What these folks don't talk about, and I've ran into a couple of them, and I said to them, but none of you talk about the trauma, because there is trauma when you are having to have sex with strangers night after night after night.
Audrey Morrissey knows this. She's associate director for the group My Life, My Choice, where she mentors at-risk youth now. But she was just 16 years old when she began working as a prostitute in what was then called the Combat Zone,
which was downtown Boston, bright lights, strip clubs, right in Chinatown. It was a known district. As a matter of fact, today, when you talk about human trafficking in the sex industry, most people will say it doesn't exist in Boston anymore because that area is gone.
But Audrey will tell you that the sex trade obviously is not gone, nor is the fact that children are pulled into the life, as she calls it, though Audrey admits it wasn't much of a life for her. She'd been a young mother when she started selling sex. Her baby's father lured her into it.
You know, he said to me, you know, if you really love me, you will be down for me. You know, the promise of the money, me, you, and our daughter, you know, we'll be together forever sort of thing, which was, you know, I always had that fantasy in my mind. And so before you know it, one night his cousin left his other girls at home that night, and it was just the two of them in the front, and I was in the back. And they pulled over. I got out. I stood on a corner, and I have to tell you, a car pulled up immediately, and the first car that pulled up was a police officer. Mm. And my introduction into the life was a police officer in plain clothes flashing me his badge and asking me to perform a sex act, and he would not arrest me. And I remember I cried like a baby. He could tell from the crying that I didn't have a clue of what I was doing. And he did let me go, and I swore I would never go back down there again.
But she did. For the next 13 years, Audrey Morrissey sold sex, first for her boyfriend, then to support her heroin addiction, which she says was the inevitable consequence of her mind trying to escape. Leaving the room is how she puts it, while her body did what it had to do.
Would you say that you were ever coerced? Because from what you're saying...
Seduction.
Seduction, okay.
I will use this seduction tactic, which pimps use, making someone fall in love with them, right? And today you will hear girls say, you won't really hear girls say, oh, I'm a victim. You're going to hear them say, that's my boyfriend. Because the seduction tactic was used.
Are you saying that that hasn't changed since
no.
when you
oh, no.
were seduced
oh,
to
no.
begin with?
No, there is still seduction, befriending, coercion, mm-hmm. and force. Tactics has not changed.
You know, Audrey, you're a mom. I'm a mom. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, it sends a chill through my heart mm-hmm. to hear how that hasn't changed. It still happens. And I imagine perhaps it's even... I don't wish to diminish what you experienced, but is it even more pernicious now because of social media and things like that?
You better believe it. You know, I have to say that when I was in the life, we were visible. I've witnessed mothers come into the combat zone, snatching their daughters off the street corners. I've witnessed mothers coming in the strip clubs, right?
Because they knew where to find them.
Because someone saw them.
Someone saw them.
And told the mom, your daughter was in this known area, right? Here's what happens now. The problem is our children are using social media. They're giving out all of their information. They're on Facebook thinking, oh, that's my friend's friend's friend. You know, so they're accepting these guys who are manipulating them, telling them how pretty they are. And pimps can now recruit 10 girls at a time he can work on at once versus in my day when it was face-to-face. And once they post them online, then the child is put in a hotel room. And once she's put in that hotel room, the only person that knows she's in there is the pimp that put her there.
Right.
And she's not visible. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And Backpage is huge, you know, and that's how our children are being sold.
So Backpage.com, as you mentioned, it's a sort of online ad marketplace with an adult classified section. And I'm just really kind of struck by the fact that even though through social media these things are more accessible than ever, but as you're saying, they're less visible as well. Is it harder to get out of the life because of that, or to, you know, for women and especially girls who want out, is it harder now?
I would believe so, because when I think of the work that I do, I can't reach girls that I don't see. If the combat zone was still in existence, we would be able to go down there and do outreach, right?
Right.
You can go on the clubs, you can go on, you would visibly see the women and girls and have the ability to do the outreach. So it is very difficult. But a lot of referrals that we get when the human trafficking unit, when they do stings and when they find children in those stings, then they make a referral to us.
Hmm. You know, you've said that you work with girls a couple times mm-hmm. now. How old are we talking?
Well, we take, and I have to correct that and say that we were a gender-specific program for so long. I keep forgetting. The last year, we've run a pilot program with boys.
Yeah.
And so we do serve 2 boys and 1 transgender youth. But we work with kids under the age of 18, so most of our referrals are coming in. Our average age is probably 14, but we get referrals from between 12 and 17.
Do you have advice for people who are listening who are thinking about their own kids mm-hmm. and saying, I do not want this to happen to my daughter mm-hmm. or son? Mm-hmm. What would you tell them?
I would tell them this. Don't our parents always tell us to don't talk to strangers? A lot of times a pimp is not a stranger, right? For the online kids, tell your kids to stop giving out all the information. Monitor who they're talking to online. Mm-hmm. And then for those who come from communities where the pimp is right in your community, it could be the neighbor, the guy down the street, the guy around the corner.
But then what are parents supposed to do? I mean,
you just have to educate your kids, you know. And one of the things we always say to them, if a guy gives you a name that you know his mother did not name him, that is probably one clue, right? Or this guy that's not working, but he has all this money, all this, the latest gear, but you know he doesn't work anywhere.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, educating our girls on the signs, and for me, because of my experience, whatever information, if my kids are too careful, so what? Hmm. So what? I'm all right with that.
Audrey, I wonder if I could just ask you one final question. You're the assistant director of My Life, My Choice. Mm-hmm. And the name of the group is so interesting to me, My Life, My Choice. I wonder, what lessons do you think your life holds for people who might be listening?
Oh, that I was once a victim, that I'm now a survivor, and now I'm a leader. When our girls come through, we let them know that, honey, you're a victim. This was something done to you. This is not who you are. It is a multi-billion-dollar industry that was looking for you, sweetie, and you didn't even know they were looking for you. But we're helping them get their voices out, you know, in a real powerful way.
I'm hearing you, and I'm hearing your story, and I'm hearing the ages of the kids that you work with. And how can you not be furious?
Oh, I'm always pissed off, and we piss the girls off, too.
But I mean, it's there's like a dagger of anger in my heart that people do this.
Yeah.
To other vulnerable young people.
Mm-hmm. It's horrible.
But you don't seem angry.
Well, I am angry. I've been doing this a long time, and there's a piece of me, too, that has to have, once I get to the other side, in order for me to succeed, for me, I have to have some forgiveness. And so I'm so fortunate. I'm so fortunate to, not that it was a good part of my life, but I'm fortunate that I've been able to live two different lives in one lifetime. And to be able to turn that ugly stuff into good, it does my spirit well.
Well, Audrey Morrissey is assistant director of the anti-sex trafficking group My Life, My Choice. Thank you so much for coming in and talking with me.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.